to order. Let the record reflect that it is 3:43 p.m. Tuesday, March 17th. Let the record also reflect that we have a quorum. Present today are Vice Chair Coghill and Senator Wilson and myself, Chairman Rivak. Would also like to recognize Senator Marchicki. We have Carrie Cooperrider from Senate Records, Brett Mello as our moderator, and my committee aide, Betty Tangeman, staffing our committee today. Thanks for all the work you do. I'd like to remind everybody to please silence your cell phones. Today we have SB 88, Office of Administrative Hearing, sponsored by Senator Marchicki. We'll also be considering the governor's appointees, Craig Johnson, to the Personnel Board, and Daniel Lasota and Hardy Van Lawrence to the Alaska Public Offices Commission, and we'll take public testimony. Lastly, we'll hear SB 188, Lottery Public Corporation Fund Unlawful Sale at the request of the governor. Plan is to hear that and do some public testimony and see how far we get with that. So the first item on the agenda is SB 88, Office of Administrative Hearings. This is a second hearing on the bill. We first heard the bill last week on March 10th and heard public testimony. To start off with, we have a draft of a committee substitute for SB 88 that I'd like to adopt. Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the CES for Senate Bill number 88, version S, that is 31LS. 0284/S is our working document.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. I'll object for the purposes of discussion and would like to invite my committee aide, Betty Tangeman. Please put yourself on the record and explain these changes to us.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Betty Tangeman. I'm a committee aide for Chairman Rivak. The request came from the bill, the administrative law judges that are working on this, and page 8, line 18, they requested it be changed from 45 days to 20 days, explaining that it was an initial drafting error, and also the committee substitute changes the time limit for the final decision maker to issue a proposed decision from 45 to 20 days, but only for boards and commissions. Because boards and commissions must act in a public meeting and must provide advance public notice that they will take up a proposed decision, the 20-day time frame is sufficient for them. The requirement for public notice ensures that the board or commission will have ample time to review the case before acting. And then the very last page of the bill, Section 22, the effective date was changed because this bill was initially introduced in 2019, so it's typical to change the effective date to July 1st, 2021. And that's it.
Thank you, Ms. Tangeman. Are there any questions or any other objections? All right, I'll go ahead and withdraw my objection, and we will adopt the committee substitute for Senate Bill 88, version 31-LS0284/S. Since the last meeting, Senator Marchicki's office distributed a response to Senator Kawasaki's question, which you all have in your packets. We also have Senator Marchicki, and we have Mr. Willis, staff to Senator Marchicki, in the room. We have Christopher Kennedy, current administrative law judge and former deputy director of the Office of Administrative Hearings. And we also have Andrew Hemingway, retired administrative law judge, both on the phone in case there are any further questions or issues for discussion. Do we have any questions or issues for discussion?
Good bill, Mr.
Do you have any closing comments, Senator Marchicki?
Very briefly, Mr. Chairman, good afternoon, and thanks for hearing this bill again. This is essentially a good government bill. It'll streamline the process for hearing administrative appeals in Alaska and update the 16-year-old statutes I think it'll allow timely, cost-effective, and high-quality administrative adjudication services. Simple bill. I think it's relatively important, and I appreciate you processing it through this committee.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. With that, what is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'm only going to complain that this was a bill I was going to carry. With that, I move that we move the CS for Senate Bill number 88 from committee with the indeterminate fiscal note.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, Senate Bill 88 moves from this committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Governor's appointees. First, we'll hear from Craig Johnson, who's calling from Anchorage. He is seeking reappointment to the Personnel Board, and if confirmed, his term would expire 3/1/2026. Mr. Johnson, if you can hear us, please introduce yourself for the record and tell us about your qualifications as they relate to the board.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate an opportunity to come before the committee again. I appreciate you guys being down there. I know you'd probably rather be home with your families at this time, and I appreciate it. So I'll try to make this as quick as possible. I was appointed last year to the Board of Personnel, so I've served 1 year. As you can see in my resume, I was previously a legislator for 10. In that role, I served as rules chairman, chairman of resources, members of various committees, but also that's not on there, I served on the ethics committee, which I think positions me uniquely to understand the administrative ethics laws, to position myself to interpret anything that comes along there, plus statutes and regulations. As you may or may not know, the board is responsible for establishing the status of employees in terms of their classifications, monitoring the reports they do on their disclosures, and also serve as the ethics committee for in the event of an administrative ethics complaint. With that, it's been a joy to serve. It's not a very active board. I think we've met twice. Most of our time is spent on making sure that all of the other boards and commissions get their reports out on time. I do enjoy the work, and it's as being a politician for 10 years, it's hard to withdraw, and I appreciate an opportunity to keep my little toe in the water. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions or any question you might have of me.
Any questions, members of the committee?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Coghill.
I just can't pass up the opportunity. First of all, good to hear your voice, Craig. Thank you for being willing to serve. I guess now that you've served a little while, what are the issues that surface to the top of things that you have to deal with?
Primarily, making sure that all the boards are in line with their the statutory requirements for filing out their conflict of interest and ethics positions. As you know, that have to declare conflicts if there's any kind of vote taken, and we make sure that all those are done and in order and just kind of oversee that. I think, there has been no ethics challenges. There are a couple of things that are pending. And I think, Senator Coghill, you served on the Ethics Committee. You can't talk specifically about those. But there are a couple of things that are out there that are actually happened prior to me being appointed. So mainly just keeping track of what's going on and making sure all the boards and commissions are in line and live up to the statutes that the legislature's put in place.
Thank you for being willing to serve.
Thank you. And I got a little concerned when you took your coat off. I was kind of hoping I wasn't in for a woodshed.
Well, thank you, Representative Johnson, for your service to the state and your continued willingness to serve the state. We appreciate it greatly.
Thank you very much.
All right. We will move on to Mr. Dan Lasota, who is online from Fairbanks. And he is seeking his first appointment to the Alaska Public Offices Commission. If confirmed, his term would expire 2025. Mr. Lasota, if you could please introduce yourself and tell us about your qualifications for this position.
Good afternoon. My name's Dan Lasota. Just checking to see if my audio's terrible.
I can hear him.
Yes, we can hear you, sir. Please proceed.
Okay. Well, as you know, I've been appointed by Governor Dunleavy to AHOC as one of the commissioners. I hope to communicate to you what I believe are my qualifications, my approach to public service, and make myself available to any questions that you might have. I've been in Alaska since 87 when I came to Fairbanks as a grad student at the GI. No one at the age of 21 really knows what they'll be doing by the time they're 26. I did not realize at the time that I would be a member of the Fairbanks North Star Assembly a short 5 years later. That was a long time ago, it seems, at least by dog, child-rearing, and internet years. I'm a father of three, right now an instructional designer at UAF, a business owner, and dedicated voter. My interest in public service was and is rooted in the idea that all of the public needs good representation. While my initial interest in municipal government was based on local education, library recycling, and other issues, I quickly found myself advocating for a much longer list of public initiatives. Much of the important and critical work of local government isn't issue-based and hopefully not ideologically tilted. What is most important is that a public official remain open to listening to diverse viewpoints on a whole range of issues, maintaining ethical standards that are beyond reproach. I do have direct experience as a campaign manager and candidate dealing with the numerous APOC reports involved with several municipal campaigns. As you know, I've been appointed to the commission as one of the designated Democrats. I'm proud of being a Democrat, but I would like you to know that I'm more proud of being an Alaskan first. Whatever business comes before APOC, I would hope that people see me first, want to pay attention to details, is well-briefed on cases, aware of statutory requirements, and above all else, fair. I look forward to working with the staff of APOC, the other commissioners, and you, the legislature, when and if that is warranted, in order to maintain the openness and transparency of our elections, commissions, and government. I hope that the belief that I do have the belief that we Alaskans can work together toward common goals for the common good when we listen to each other and separate ourselves from issues that divide us. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Lasota. Do we have questions? Yes, Senator Coghill.
Dan, thank you very much for being willing to serve in this. I know that you bring a rich history. And I just wanted to express my gratitude for your willingness to serve, because I know it's not like there's nothing else to do in life. So I think it's an important task, and you said very well why you'd be willing to do it. And so thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
I also appreciate your willingness to serve, Mr. Lasota. Thank you very much for taking the time to be telephonically with us today, and again, your willingness to serve. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It was my intent to visit the Fairbanks LIO, but as you might have known, it's been closed today.
Yes, sir. There's a lot of closures. Well, thank you for being with us. I think that's all we have. And right now we're going to move on to Lawrence Van Hardy. Lawrence, if you're on the phone and can hear us, please. Lawrence, he's on the line from Fairbanks and is seeking his first appointment to the Alaska Public Offices Commission, and if confirmed, his term would expire on 3/1/2022. And, sir, if you're online, please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your qualifications.
Yes, I am online. My last name is Lawrence, middle name Van, which is what I go by, and I was born and raised in Texas along with three brothers. My undergraduate degree is from the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University. I obtained a law degree from the College of William and Mary. I moved to Alaska in 1978 and have owned a solo law practice for 40 years. I too served on the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly for two terms, from 2012 through 2018. And I had a mid-session or whatever, I can't think of the term, but I was appointed by the governor to the Alaska Public Offices Commission last June. So I have participated in three regular meetings and at least a couple of special meetings since then. My qualifications for serving on the commission, I think, include my legal education experience, which helps me to understand the relevant statutes and regulations and to evaluate evidence and to adjudicate disputes. I've been involved, or I've run for elective office four times, three times for the borough assembly and one time for the state house. So I understand how campaigns work and how money is raised, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Do we have questions? Senator Coghill.
I just want to thank Van for being willing to serve and watch over those of us who do the election cycles, as you have seen. Thank you for being willing to work on this commission.
Well, you're welcome. It's an honor to do so. You know, I believe fair elections are crucial for a healthy democracy, and this commission does important work.
Well, thanks, Van. I guess I have a question. Is there anything in particular that concerns you or you would like to do on the Public Offices Commission, or specific issues you'd like to dig into? Any specific passions you have?
The things of being a candidate, I've received, a couple of pretty scary letters from the commission or from the staff. The fact of the matter that the law provides that there's a $50 a day fine for a failure to report, but in the 9 days before the election, that goes up to $500. And and unfortunately, the way that the law and the regs we read now is that after the election, there's not another report until February. So as a result, candidates can receive some pretty scary letters regarding how much their potential fine is. And, this is a problem really more in the law than anything. And, I'd like to see the letters from the staff maybe emphasize I understand that they have to disclose the potential maximum fine, but I think, I'd like to see them say if the violation is found to be non-intentional, it will not be that high. But it's the problems with these letters, which I think scare the living daylights out of people, is that it's based upon the law. So neither the staff nor the commission can do much about that. That $500 a day fine in those last 9 days. I agree, if there's an intentional violation of the campaign finance laws, that's warranted, but that's rare. Most campaigns, are not deliberately violating reporting requirements. And so, it's something I think the legislature might think about at some point, or at least maybe, the big problem is that there's 90 days or so between the election day and when that follow-up report is due in February, and the $500 a day is accruing every day. And, I think that creates a lot of stress, and I think it's scared people from participating in the process at times.
That is a good point. I think it's Dr. Lawrence, isn't it?
No, not really. I'm a lawyer. I mean, technically, yeah, I've got a doctorate in jurisprudence, but no, I'm an attorney, not a doctor.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your testimony and your willingness to serve. We really appreciate it. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Senator. you guys take care.
All right, you too, sir. Thank you. All right, so do we have any further questions or comments about any of the appointees? Seeing none, we're going to open public testimony in all three. Public testimony on the appointees is now open. Is there anyone in the room who would like to provide testimony? Seeing none and seeing none online, we'll close public testimony. Public testimony is now closed. If there are no further questions or comments at this point, we'll pass around the signing sheet, which for the record reads, in accordance with AS 3905080, the Senate State Affairs Committee has reviewed the following and recommends the appointment be forwarded to a joint session for consideration to the Personnel Board and Alaska Public Offices Commission. Craig Johnson of Anchorage, Dan Lasota of Fairbanks, and Hardy Van Lawrence of Fairbanks. Now, this does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions. We'll take a brief recess. All right, we're back on the record. Next, we'll take up SJR 14, an act relating to actions upon veto, sponsored by the Senate Judiciary Committee. We have heard this bill twice before, on February 25th and on March 12th. We have completed public testimony. At this time, I'd like to gauge the will of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move the Senate joint resolution from committee with individual recommendations in the attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, SJR 14 moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. All right, we're back on the record. Next, we will hear SB 188, Lottery Public Corporation Fund Unlawful Sale at the request of the governor. We are not going to take a deep dive into this bill today, but instead we want to hear a presentation about the history of lotteries and how they operate in multiple other states. Due to our limited time, I'd greatly appreciate if the committee members could hold their questions until the end. I understand that there might be questions along the way. We're trying to we'll definitely have more opportunities to comment as well. So just I'd like folks to keep that in mind. We have multiple invited testifiers today who are online. We also have Dan Stickle, Chief Economist for the Department of Revenues, available for fiscal questions. We'll begin the presentation with Gregory Simoraski. Forgive me, sir, we'll find out how you say that when you come online. He's a senior development executive from the Department of Commerce. And is he in the room here? He is online. So all right, Greg, can you hear me? Could you help us pronounce your last name and give us your testimony?
Yes, this is Gregory Samoraski, Senior Development Executive, Department of Commerce, State of Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I ask if you can all hear me okay?
We can, sir. Thank you. Please proceed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be working for the next 10 minutes or so through the presentation that should be in your packet or hopefully on the screen, titled "A Proposal to Create an Alaska State Lottery Corporation." So the next page, page 2, which is titled Lottery History. So this is a brief history of the modern state lottery program. The modern state lotteries began in New Hampshire in 1964 with the New Hampshire State Lottery draw type game. To review, draw type games are the games where balls are drawn out of an urn, and you try to match the numbers on your ticket, and if there's enough matches, why, that's a winning ticket. In 1970, scratch-off tickets, which we often call instant games or instant tickets, were introduced in a number of states. The lottery games many of us know best, the multi-state draw games, Powerball was introduced in 1988, and Mega Millions in 1996. These are games where states who participate pool the resources to produce rather large prizes for winning tickets. Currently, 45 states and the District of Columbia operate lotteries. 43 of those offer both draw and instant games. So if Alaska were to adopt a lottery, we would be the 46th out of 50th state. Okay, the next slide, please. Okay, the reason that many states, of course, have launched lotteries is that they're a significant revenue source. The total national sales of all lottery products were $85.6 billion in 2018. Of that $85.6 billion, $23.4 billion has been returned to the states, either general funds or education funds, or other funds, as the case may be. So that's a little over 25% of all revenues have been returned to the state coffers. Next slide, please. Now, this one's entitled "No Longer Just Your Grandfather's Lottery." And the reason for that title is to point out that we have both traditional games and rather new games in the state lottery system. And it's all part of state lotteries. So the traditional games would be things like, again, Powerball, Mega Millions, other state draw games, and scratch-off tickets. Those traditional games generate $73.4 billion of revenues. Interestingly, the vast majority of that is from the scratch-off tickets last year or in 2018, generating over $49 billion of the total. The balance of state revenues is from some of the newer games, and whether we would do those in Alaska or not would be a question for several years into the future, but some of those new games would be things like Keno or other kinds of monitoring games that are typically played in bars and restaurants. A few states, actually 8 states, have introduced what are called video lottery terminals, which is the ability to play various games on electronic video terminals, often in bars, restaurants, airports, or other facilities like that. Now, as of 2018, the traditional games still generate the bulk of the revenues, but some of those new games have generated significant revenues in states that have implemented them. Next slide, please. Okay, so it's often asked, what is the revenue breakdown of each dollar spent on a lottery ticket? Where does that money go? And I presented this in two ways. One is, you know, what's a reasonable way to think of where a dollar might be allocated in Alaska? And then I've also put an example of the current Kansas lottery just as an example. So we would guess that about 60% of each dollar collected would go to prize money. Obviously, the reason people play is to earn prizes. About 6% go to commissions for the retailers who sell the lottery products. to the extent we hire a gaming contractor or outsource the operations of the lottery to a gaming company, which is typical for most states, that might be in Alaska about 10% of the revenue. The cost of administration, so a state corporation or however we decide to organize it, would be about 4%, leaving a potential transfer to the general fund of about 20%. Next slide, please. So on page 6, I've illustrated 6 other states that are similar in size and population to Alaska to show what kinds of revenues they've generated. Now, the way to read this page, for example, with Wyoming, the first number on the line is total revenue. So in Wyoming's case, it's a little over $28 million a year. The second number is how much is goes to the state coffers. And then the final line is the percentage of total revenues which go back to the state. So you can see there's a wide range in states that are a little bit like Alaska. Neither Wyoming nor North Dakota have scratch-off games. They're draw games only. And so their revenues are rather small, $5 and $8 million per year. Whereas some of the other states like Montana, Maine, and Idaho that allow scratch-off games are quite a bit higher. South Dakota is one of those states that has video lottery terminals, and notice their total revenue to the state is almost $125 million a year out of a total collected of $278 million. Now, I'm not saying Alaska would or should do video lottery terminals. It simply illustrates that those kinds of games are what allow some of the states to collect the largest revenues in the lottery corporation.
Okay, let's. Do we have any questions up to this point right now? I have a question. What do you mean by video lottery terminal? Could you explain what one of those might look like? I mean, is that the casino games, electronic games, those sorts of things?
Yes, I assume that's you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the question. Yes, that's we call them video lottery terminals. So they are terminals where you can play games like blackjack or poker, or you know games of that sort. You know, we've all seen them in Las Vegas or you know Nevada if we traveled through that state. But other states have incorporated those games as part of their lotteries. Again, there's about 8 states to do so, mostly on the East Coast, but South Dakota would be one example a little bit closer. So again, I'm not saying we would or should do those, and typically they're launched a number of years after, you know, the more basic games. But yes, that's what we mean by video lottery terminals.
Well, thank you, and I noticed that their return is 44.7%. That's quite a bit higher than all the others. Is that because they do video gaming, do you know, and does that have anything to do with tourism?
My understanding, Mr. Chairman, and one of the state lottery directors that we have here will correct me if I'm wrong, is that that's the net earnings from video lottery terminals. So the winning percentage is much higher on video poker or video blackjack than it might be just on standard buy a lottery ticket game. So it's the net amount, I believe, or the amount after winnings are paid out that's distributed. So that would be a higher percentage of profit, of course, that goes back to the states. But it's computed in a different way. And again, that's my understanding, and I'll be corrected by one of our other witnesses if I'm incorrect on that.
Okay. And we have some others. Okay, we have a question from Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thank you for being online today. This slide and the previous slide and maybe the one just before that. So there's $30 million in revenue from, say, North Dakota that's being extracted from the economy, and then $8 million comes back from the state or comes back for the state. Is that what this is saying?
Through the chair to Senator Kawasaki. Yes, what's that saying is, and I think you referenced North Dakota, collects $31 million of that money, most of the money is paid back in prizes. And yes, $8 million goes back to the state. Typically, the ratio is about 20 to 25 to 30%, depending on the state and how much they pay out in prizes.
Through the chair.
Yes, Senator Kawasaki.
And so this could be money that a prize winner wins while they're on vacation, but not necessarily a person who's from the great state of North Dakota. Is that correct?
Through the chair to Senator Kawasaki, yes. Anybody who's physically in the state is able to play state lottery games. So the answer to that is yes. One who's a resident of the state can't play if they're not resident in that state at the time. I think that answers your question.
And then follow up.
Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, just one other question. Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, I'm not sure about Maine and Idaho. They have Indian gaming. Are the numbers inclusive of the revenues that are on Indian gaming land?
Through the chair to Senator Kawasaki, no, these are simply solely state lottery numbers. So it doesn't include any private casinos, whether Indian or otherwise, or any other private non-state-owned gaming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. Any other questions? Sir, please proceed.
Okay, so I think we're on page 7, which is potential revenues for Alaska. And Dan Stickle is here who can provide additional detail if necessary. But basically, these numbers were developed by the Department of Revenue based on other states' results scaled for Alaska population. So if we were to do draw games only, which would be Mega Millions, Powerball, and any Alaska state lottery, we would expect about $6.5 million of annual revenue. If we were to add scratch-off tickets based on the experience of other states, we would expect $30 to $40 million of annual earnings. And if we were at some point in the future to add video lottery terminals and or monitor games, the annual revenue could well exceed $100 million. And the point of this slide is really to illustrate that at least going to scratch-off tickets is probably what's necessary for a lottery to be a significant source of state revenue. That's the point of the slide. Okay, the next page, page 8. It's just a very, very rough outline of what's in Senate Bill 188. Okay, and what's proposed by the bill is that a new Alaska State Lottery Corporation would be enacted or set up. It would have directors appointed by the government, and the main feature is would be given broad authority to select games, to promulgate regulations through the normal process, as well as to choose licensed and licensed retailers and whatever contractors and employees might be necessary. So it is delegating most of the authority to operate the lottery to the State Lottery Corporation, who in turn might hire contractors and retailers to actually run the lottery. Okay, and then the second final slide, page 9, is a possible implementation schedule. And again, when we wrote this, we assumed that the legislature might be able to take action this session. Okay, if it were to act this session, we would hope that board directors could be appointed this summer. An executive director, who would be the key staff person, hired potentially in fall. That we'd have an organization year in fiscal year 21, which again would include hiring a consultant, hiring a contractor, staff, appointing retailers, doing the background checks, et cetera. We would hope by FY 22 to be able to break even, and by FY 23 to begin to generate transfers to the general fund. Now, it's a detail that we haven't, that goes beyond probably, you know, very high level, but the idea is to create a special sub fund in the general fund to collect the lottery earnings which could then go to any of the designated areas that are in the bill, or obviously, since designated funds are simply that, any areas that the legislature and future governor may decide, or future legislature and governor may decide. Okay, and then the final page is what we think might be needed for an appropriations request. And really, it's fiscal year 21, or, you know, the year after, you know, this legislation would be enacted. And we would expect we'd need about $3 million in a capital appropriation for the first year, probably with additional authority for the corporation to borrow funds. $3 million really is the minimum that we're seeing when we talk to other state directors. We expect the fiscal year after that to be a break-even year, and again, 23 and beyond, not requiring an appropriation, but actually seeing payments back to the state general fund or sub-fund. So I'll end my comments there, and thank you very much for being patient and listening.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your testimony. All right. Do we have any questions? Okay. I was too quick. If you could, we have a question from Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, just really quickly. So I'm pretty agnostic to the idea that we have commercial gaming in the state of Alaska. We have hold'em games once in a while at our house, and I usually win, which is great. But my question is, besides the potential revenues, has the administration considered the potential, I guess, you know, the losses, the, you know, if you go to Las Vegas and you're one block away from the Strip, you see people there chain smoking and spending a lot of money that they don't really have on slots, and it's that sort of scares me. But has the administration thought about the potential societal losses in addition to the revenue that would come to the state?
Through the chair, I'm sorry, did I hear something more to your question, Senator?
Nope, that was it.
Yeah, through the chair to Senator Kawasaki, yes, we've looked into that issue. You know, what we found, and some of the other people on the line may also wish to speak to this question and may have more insight than we do. But what our research indicates is that, you know, the issues with gambling addiction and such are more as a result of casinos and things of that sort rather than the more traditional state lottery games. Now, the video lottery terminals are, you know, clearly rather new and probably haven't been studied as extensively, but the problems we've seen have been more on the casino side than the state lottery side. And I don't think anybody's suggesting that anytime in the near future the lottery corporation would consider casinos. So, you know, that's the way we thought about it. Now, again, some of the other witnesses today may have more comments on that from experience in their states, and I would certainly defer to them on that question.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you again, sir. Now we will move on to Bishop Woolsey with the Arkansas Lottery, a director of Arkansas Lottery and president of the North American Association of State and Provincial Lotteries. Please introduce yourself, sir, for the record, and begin your testimony.
Yes, sir. This is Bishop Woolsey. I'm the director of the Arkansas Lottery, and as you stated, I am the president of the North American Association of State and Provincial Lotteries. Obviously, that's an association of 53 North American lotteries that serves to advocate on behalf of the lottery industry and bring awareness to lottery issues, work on responsible gambling issues, provide data to states related to sales and things of that nature. So we're an educational organization more than anything, and we stand ready to provide any information to this body and to the Alaska Legislature and the Governor's Office that may be helpful as it relates to determining whether or not to have a lottery in Alaska and what type and form that lottery may take. I don't want to take up your time with any type of speech or opening, anything of that nature. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have as it relates to any of the subjects that we've talked about thus far. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions and let me know how it is that you want to proceed with this.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Woolsey. Maybe you could has it impacted? Have you had societal detriment from your lottery system? Has it had a negative impact on your folks in Arkansas?
What we found in Arkansas, we've had a lottery for just over 10 years now. And what we found is that, A, no, it has not had the impact that was discussed prior to me joining the conference here. What we found is that demographically, you probably have citizens who make between $25,000, $30,000 and $75,000 who are our core players that play every day. We haven't seen any evidence that it is a societal issue, as was discussed. I think it was discussed earlier, the question from the senator. I think more often than not, what we found, because we're kind of one of the newer lotteries, is that creating a lottery in Arkansas actually brought some form and structure to the organization and to responsible gambling within the state. Prior to that, we had two racinos in the state. There was very little money that was given to problem gambling. There was very little awareness and programs that were available. And once the lottery came online, we have advocated and brought a great deal of awareness to the problem gambling helpline that is kind of a national helpline. And the programs that may be available within the state or nationwide that would be available to anyone who has a problem gambling issue, regardless whether it's a casino or a lottery issue. So if anything, I think the lottery has brought awareness and some structure to that issue. And so from that aspect, I mean, obviously when you have any type of gaming in the state, you are going to have individuals who probably play more than they should. But I think now in Arkansas, what we brought to bear is that we actually have individuals who have the ability to call a helpline and seek help for any issues they have that may not have been available before. And we are a heavy instant state, and there is not any evidence that we've seen thus far showing that there is a societal issue with instant tickets. So I feel confident in saying that here tonight before this body.
Thank you, Mr. Woolsey. We have a question from Senator Coghill.
Bishop, thank you for coming online and talking to us. I've got three questions, basically. We decided, rather than having this as part of a state agency, that we would have a commission. And maybe the first question is that a structure that is more common or not?
Through the chair, and I'm sorry, I did not catch the senator's be proper. Now I'm addressing the board. It depends from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. As I understand it, we started with the commission. We do not have one now. However, I think the basic structure of most lotteries is a commission-based structure. There are some that are corporations, and there are some that are a true state agency, and there are some that are a quasi-state agency. But from a consistency standpoint, I believe that the majority have a commission, whether it be depending on how many members and how they're appointed, that varies. So I think that's a fairly common structure for most lotteries throughout the United States.
Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind.
Follow up.
First of all, thank you. We're considering a quasi-state corporation over a commission, and I just thought, I'm open to discussion on that. Maybe one of the other questions, Bishop, if I could, is on these, you live among states, and so you have probably people traveling in and out. Is this a state-based? Do you have to be a resident? Is it something that flows naturally? How do we distinguish between those within, say, your state and somebody out of state?
Well, through through the chair again to the senator, are we asking whether someone can win or play if they're from out of state, or how we differentiate who is within the state playing? Is that the question you're asking?
Actually, both questions. Win or play, you know, here's the question. We are definitely nearly an island because we're separated contiguously. My whole workforce is about 350,000 people. And so I'm just wondering if I have to invite a lot of people from other states to come up here and play to make it worth my while.
Well, through the chair to the senator, no, I don't believe so. Obviously, in Arkansas, just as you said, we have 7 border states. So obviously we have traffic across the state, and we do have a tourism industry. I'm not as familiar with Alaska as obviously you all are, but I believe you probably to some extent have a tourism industry. I think you probably have an industry that is seasonal, whether it be a fishing industry, things of that nature. But I think you probably can see from some of the smaller states, whether it be Wyoming or Montana, that there is a market for a lottery, and depending on how you create the lottery and what games you offer, certainly that market can be a certain level or more than that. But I think probably there are people who are in Alaska, I'm not sure what the closest lottery is, who are playing other games and probably gaming in other ways that probably could be lottery-based if the lottery was made legal in Alaska. So I certainly think there's a market for it there in Alaska for sure.
Thank you, Mr. Woolsey. We have one more question from Senator Kawasaki.
Yep, just a really quick question. Thank you for being online today. You mentioned the gambling hotline, the problem gambling hotline, and maybe Gamblers Anonymous. How are those funded within your state? Are they from revenues that would come through legal gaming, or are they just funded through general funds?
Well, through the chairman to Senator Kawasaki, those are funded partially by us, partially by the other gaming entities within the state. That is a national helpline, so I'm not aware of the exact amounts, but my assumption is they get some amounts from other states as well. We get a report on a monthly basis, which is on our website. I believe every report for every month we've ever funded that hotline for 10 years is on our website. You can go on there and look, and it shows the number of calls, the nature of the calls, whether or not that call was referred for help, if there's any follow-up, things of that nature. But I believe all gaming industries, at least in Arkansas, help fund that, and it's probably similar in most states. And there are other resources available, whether it be the National Association of Problem Gambling. We have a certification in Arkansas where we go through from top to bottom the creation of our games, the advertising of our games, the marketing of our games, and how we sell our games in retail. And a lot of the states are moving towards that model so that we are self-policing. We understand what we're doing as we're doing it and are aware of the guidelines that we've kind of self-imposed that may help us not market or create games that would be something that a problem gambling gambler would find attractive. So short answer to your question is that, yes, we help fund that, and I think probably nationwide, whether it be a lottery, a casino, or other gambling organization, they probably provide some money to that hotline and other resources.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Bishop. We really appreciate you calling all the way in here to Alaska to share your thoughts with us. We're going to
move. My pleasure. Happy to help.
Thanks. We are going to move on now to David Barton, director of the New Mexico Lottery. Mr. Barton, if you could please introduce yourself for the record and let us know about your thoughts here on gaming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure to be with you today. Like Bishop, I'll be as brief as I can and answer as all your questions that you have. I have a long history with the lottery. It started back in 2001, briefly starting the South Carolina Lottery. I actually worked with Bishop also in Arkansas when we started that lottery. And in between, I was a Senate staff attorney with the South Carolina Senate, where I spent about 15 or 16 years drafting legislation like you're doing today. So I understand the importance of your work today. I will tell you, I looked at your SB 188, the bill, and I think it's a very good bill. It has all the parts and pieces you would need to have a very successful lottery. I think it's a very forward-thinking piece of legislation, and I think it's very important. What I would tell you is to get it right out of the gate, because it's very hard if you put a lottery together and you don't have scratch tickets, per se, and you do online. And one of the reasons I'll tell you that is, and Bishop can testify to this also, while we all love Powerball, and a couple of years ago I was chair of Powerball in the country, this year Powerball sales are down 30%. So what a good scratcher product does for you is it gives you balance in your portfolio, so it actually helps you with all your games. So I would tell you, when you start the lottery, I think it's imperative to also have scratch product along with your online games. I would also tell you to be forward-thinking and think about what's going to happen in the future. There'll probably be some multi-jurisdictional game that might be sold internationally. So I would tell you to think about that when you're drafting your legislation also. I think the bill's focus is very great. I think the organization is something that Alaskans will be proud of, Mr. Chairman, and where the money goes for violence or drug abuse prevention, foster care, and the homeless. I think those are very great causes, and it also helps you promote the lottery, and people know where the money goes, as I would say. A little bit different here in New Mexico than it was when I was in Arkansas, as I have tribal casinos here, and I also have fraternal organizations that I deal with here. We get along very well, and generally we sell product in the tribal casinos, and also at the fraternal organizations want to sell lottery products too, because it helps with their bottom line. But as I say, I think it's very important to get it right out of the gate, and I think you have a very good bill in front of you. There are things that perhaps you might want to tweak, but I think to start with that you have a good perspective with it, and I thought that the information that was given to you by Gregory today was very good, very concise. And with that, I will wrap up to allow you to ask me any questions.
Thanks, David. Do we have any questions? Yes, Senator Coghill.
David, thank you very much for coming before us. I personally struggle with this, but tell me from the New Mexico perspective. I get it that you get new money coming in, but how many on a broad scale are winners within the state? Just help me understand, because as we go to our people, and we're a small people, if we're connected to a larger group, we may just be sending a lot of our guesses out of state, and we might get some state revenue, but we may not get winners. And so playing that odds, I'm kind of curious, going to New Mexico, how did that look for you?
Through the chairman, Senator, that's a very appropriate, great question to ask. I'll tell you that probably 95% of the players that will play your scratch games will be residents of the state of Alaska. They'll win those prizes. I'll tell you, coming from a small state like New Mexico, we have less than 2 million people. Do we win the Powerball as much as I like? Definitely not. You do get some million-dollar winners that are second-tier winners more often, however. So I think it helps balance out your portfolio. You have to be in-state to actually collect your winnings, so you cannot play across the state line. So you have to be here, and I think it does add some excitement. I'll tell you that we haven't had any problems, as Bishop was talking about, with lottery gaming. All the problems that we tend to have reported to us, and I actually have a contract for about $75,000 a year to do our responsible gaming with an outside organization. All of our concerns come from the casino level. So I would tell you that lottery games, even though some of the players are the same and they play the same games, totally different when it comes to playing the Powerball. I don't know too many people that want to stand there and buy a Powerball ticket on a Thursday and wait till Saturday to see what the results are. It's just not as exciting. The scratch product, however, is something that you can play you stop by your retailer, and most of these games are local games, as I said, and someone has a chance to play that lives in the neighborhood, and they're going to spend the money in the store where they bought the ticket, depending on what the prize level is. So I think that money actually stays with the state, and you will occasionally have a Powerball winner. Like I said, in New Mexico, we're very small, and I wish I had more. But I tell you, our players love to play Powerball, and a certain amount of the money does go to that. But overall, we do have winners occasionally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, David. We appreciate your willingness to be here online with us here in Alaska. So thank you again. We're going to move on. All right, lastly, we have Mr. Kevin Cochran, Manager, Government Affairs at DraftKings Incorporated. Kevin, if you can hear us, could you please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony?
Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate State Affairs Committee, can you guys hear me?
We can, sir. Please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to share my testimony with you in support of mobile sports wagering. My name is Kevin Cochran, and I'm a manager of government affairs at DraftKings. Quickly for some background on DraftKings, we were founded in 2012 as a daily fantasy sports company with the goal of bringing sports fans closer to the games that they love. And since that time, DraftKings has evolved into a global sports entertainment company with more than 10 million customers throughout the world. In May 2018, the United States Supreme Court invalidated the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act of 1992, which I'm going to refer to as PASPA from here on out, which paved the way for states to legalize sports wagering within their borders. Shortly thereafter, DraftKings entered into the sports wagering industry, and in August 2018, we made history as the first company to offer a mobile sports wagering app outside the state of Nevada when we launched our product in New Jersey. Now, as the operator of a top mobile sports book in New Jersey and a regulated operator in multiple jurisdictions, as previously mentioned, we would like to thank you for the opportunity to participate in today's hearing to discuss the importance of bringing a competitive, fully mobile sports wagering market to Alaska. I think the most important point to start out, and it was similar to what Director Woosley said, that sports wagering is already taking place in Alaska on a massive scale. There's an estimated 138,000 people betting over $348 million worth of illegal wagers each year. Now, nearly all sports wagers in Alaska are placed online through offshore websites in this robust illegal market that many players don't even recognize as illegal. Across the country, states are implementing regulatory schemes to bring this activity into a legal, regulated light. Now, DraftKings supports a sports wagering framework in Alaska that protects consumers, generates maximum revenue for the state, and stamps out this pervasive illegal market that I've already kind of talked about. Now, that means a robust sports betting market without an artificial limit on mobile competition and no hurdles for consumers to place wagers in the regulated market. Mobile sports betting allows customers to place bets conveniently from their mobile phones and their devices. States that don't allow mobile sports betting have seen much lower revenues, growth, and penetration of the existing illegal market. For example, comparing the New Jersey and Mississippi sports betting markets demonstrate the importance of a mobile sports wagering market in the post-PASPA world. Now, New Jersey has established itself as the leader among states that have chosen to regulate sports wagering following the invalidation of PASPA. They've embraced a fully competitive mobile marketplace, like I've already discussed, and they've had more than $3.2 billion wagered since launching in August 2018, and over 85% of those total bets are placed via their online platform. Conversely, Mississippi chose to limit the availability of sports wagering to on-casino premises only. Following their August 2018 launch, they generated a lot less than their market potential with statewide mobile wagering. And, and their executive director of the Mississippi Gaming Commission, Alan Godfrey, acknowledged the importance of mobile sports wagering while testifying at a Louisiana Senate hearing in October 2018, stating, "If you want to do something to suppress the illegal market, mobile betting is the way to go." Now, as Alaska begins to consider implementing sports betting, there are a few factors to consider in order to build the strongest, most effective regulatory regime while encouraging Alaskans to bet on a legal, regulated market. First, legal operators are not just competing with other legitimate entities in the United States. They have to keep their pricing competitive as they are in competition with illegal offshore sports books that do not face the same taxation and regulatory costs. Barriers to entry like high taxes and fees impact an operator's ability to offer competitive pricing, which is a significant factor for consumers when making their decision on where to spend their money. Second, not only must the state consider a mobile market, particularly in a rural state like Alaska, it is crucial to allow for the ability to register and fund an account via a mobile device. Creating artificial barriers for consumers, like requiring them to drive hours to register or place mobile bets, or I'm sorry, bets in person, is both antiquated and impractical in a time when people file their taxes online through their cell phones. We've also seen our operations that encourage, or that mobile markets encourage a wider participation, and as a result, they effectively reduce that illegal market. Third, it is crucial to allow multiple operators to serve a market. A marketplace is ripe with consumer choice, and that will lead to a much better consumer experience that continually forces operators to innovate and offer new and exciting products to Alaskans. This will help also retain them on the regulated market. Now, contrary to the thriving offshore market, DraftKings and others in a competitive mobile market and a regulated marketplace take seriously the issues of underage wagering, problem gambling, and providing consumer protections. At DraftKings, we use what we call KYC, or Know Your Customer, technology to ensure underage individuals are not able to create an account, deposit, or wager through our website or application. When verifying a customer's identification, a check is conducted using the following demographic information: first name, last name, physical address, date of birth, social security number, and geolocation of the customer. The verification process is facilitated using multiple vendors, and only upon successful verification is that customer able to create an account. And DraftKings works with leading companies to monitor and detect users and their location, and this is done through different types of information, including cell phone location data, GPS locators, Wi-Fi triangulation, and a bunch of other technology. Additionally, for the small segment of the population that struggles with gambling, we provide safeguards that allow customers to set their own deposit and play limits and to self-exclude from participation should this be the route they choose. A user also has their entire transaction history available to them at any time. The account history provides detailed information regarding all bets placed, all winnings and losses, and a summary of the play over the last month, 3 years, year, or life, or 3 months, year, or lifetime. To wrap up, if Alaska wants to protect its consumers best and shutter the illegal offshore sports betting market and provide the state additional revenue streams, that is best achieved through the creation of a competitive, fully mobile sports wagering market. Thank you for your opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer any question you may have.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. King. We're moving pretty close to the end of our committee meeting today, and so I think we'll move on to public testimony. We do have some folks online, and I want to make sure that I allow everybody the opportunity to testify. So thanks again, Mr. Cochran. We appreciate it. If we hear this bill in the future, we hope you can come back online with us. Okay. Next, we will go to I just want to say, before I move into public testimony here, I would like to remind everybody online, we have just enough folks online where if you limit your testimony to 2 minutes, 2 minute testimony at the most, then we'll be able to get all the testifiers through today. So please keep that in mind as you give us your testimony. All right, public testimony is now open on SB 188. We will start with Mr. Kevin McKinley of the AK Shriners. Mr. McKinley, please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony. Kevin McKinley, are you there? Can you hear us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, sir.
Yes. For the record, my name is Kevin McKinley, and I'm a member of the Alaska Shrine. And I've been a member there for many years, and I'm also a member of the Alaska Charitable Gaming Association. The Alaska Shriners help children from the time they're born, and sometimes even before they're born, until they're 18 years old. We help them with their medical bills, and all of these children are from Alaska, and they require medical attention through no fault of their own. These children are able to make it to these hospital appointments, which is vital to their medical needs. And I'm wondering about the unintended consequences of expanding gaming laws in Alaska, which would greatly diminish the revenue, not just for the Shriners and the Shrine Kids, but many other charities. And just for reference, the Shriners have about 200 children that they take care of with pull tabs through charitable gaming. I'd like to also point out that if we're going to create entertainment and generate revenue from gaming or from gambling, it should not be at the expense of the children or others in need of assistance that rely on the money generated from charitable gaming. And I do have, I hope I saved enough time to ask one question for one of the speakers that was speaking about the revenue generated. And the question is the states that have lotteries, what has the effect been on charitable gaming in those states? And thank you, and that's the end of my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. McKinley. I want to get through public testimony here. We will keep your question in mind. We will bring that up the next time we hear this bill. Moving on to Sandy Powers. Sandy, can you hear us? Are you there? Please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Sandy Powers, and I'm the president of the Alaska Charitable Gaming Alliance. I also own and operate Big Valley Bingo. It is a charity. We raise money for our charities. We opened in October of 2017. Our facility employs 20 Alaskans, and we represent 15 charities. In our first 2 years, we contributed over $570,000 back to the Valley community, donating to charities that are located in the Valley. We really feel like we should have had a seat at the table much earlier in the legislative process. We're very concerned about this expansion of gambling in Alaska. The majority of the money goes out of state and doesn't fix the budget gap. An estimated $100 million in revenues won't fix a $1.5 billion budget gap. Many of the states that were testifying to you today, New Mexico ranks 45th economically, so I don't really think all of their gambling stuff is benefiting their state. They do have increased crimes and drugs. And a gaming corporation has a very big concern for us that they would be able to make changes without the legislature having input on that. Charitable gaming was created to raise money for nonprofit organizations. We have almost 1,100 charities that benefit from gaming dollars. Over 1,000 Alaskans work in the charitable gaming industry, and over $35 million annually goes back out to Alaskan nonprofit organizations. So if our industry gets damaged by this, they're going to come to the state, who already has a $1.5 billion budget gap, and the state will be unable to help these great charities like the Shriners and others. The Alaska Charitable Gaming Alliance has nonprofit support of the Alaska Police and Fire Chaplains Ministry, the Fraternal Order of State Troopers, both who have a board seat on ACGA, and the support of the Alaska Peace Officers Association. Many other charities.
Ms. Powers, I hate to do this. I want to make sure we're pushing 1 minute, so if you could wrap. I just want to make sure we can let everybody have at least a little bit of a say.
I think it's really demonstrative that you can see that there's a lot of out-of-state money that's looking to try to expand gambling in Alaska. And from my understanding, most of that money goes out of Alaska, where in charitable gaming, the bulk of the money stays in Alaska to benefit Alaskans. So thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I've submitted a letter from ACGA that's in your committee packet.
Great. Thank you, Sandy. And that reminds me, for all the testifiers online, again, if you could keep your – I'm sorry to have to limit the testimony. We want to get to everybody, but – you can have all your comments submitted to the committee via ssta@akleg.gov. That's Sierra Sierra Tango Alpha at akleg.gov. And we'll have those available for the whole committee moving forward. So thank you again, Ms. Powers. Next, we'll move to David Lambert. David, could you please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony?
Hello, this is Dave Lambert. I'm a gaming operator in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I have about 25 different permittees that I raise funds for. Currently, to make a lottery successful, they say you have to have scratch-off tickets. Scratch-off tickets are pull tabs. So currently there's $35 million going to the charities from pull tab sales and charitable gaming. Now, under the instant scratch-off tickets, they're saying that's the only way to make a lottery work, and it's going to be 30 to 40 million. The only way you're going to get that 30 or 40 million is take it away from the charities. And what's happening is too much, too fast. I would request that you guys set up a task force to investigate this, and so you know all the ramifications. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Lambert. Next, we'll move on to Les Burnell. Sir, I hope I pronounced your name right. Could you please put yourself on the record and begin?
Yes. My name's Les Burnell, and I've served as the National Director of Stop Predatory Gambling for the last 12 years. We're a 501c3 that's based in Washington, D.C., and we're a national social reform network of individuals and organizations from across the country. And tonight I'm calling you from Boston, Massachusetts. So tonight I'm participating in this. Alaska members of our national network asked if I would testify briefly at your hearing this afternoon. And hopefully if you have this hearing again, I'd love to participate in a more full way, because there's so much more information that we didn't cover this afternoon. And I'll submit very detailed testimony to the committee, but there's one specific piece of it that I'm going to highlight with you right now, and that is so the Dave Ramsey Show. Many of you are probably familiar with it. It's hosted by personal finance expert Dave Ramsey. It's the fifth most downloaded podcast in the United States. And why is that? It's because tens of millions of citizens are broke. So saving money is the road to wealth creation. Yet this concept of savings is almost foreign to most of Alaska's citizens. So as we talk here this afternoon, more than two-thirds of Alaska's citizens are financially broke. So according to GoBankingRates.com, which is a national site ranking all these states, almost one out of every two Alaska citizens have $0 in savings. Okay? More than two out of three have less than $1,000 in savings. You got more than 81,000 Alaskans who are living below the poverty line, and tens of thousands or more of citizens are one job layoff, one medical problem, or a death in the family from being broke themselves. So that the dire financial situation that two-thirds of your constituents find themselves in, it would be far more severe over the last 20 years if Alaska has operated a state lottery, if you allowed casinos or internet gambling or these other forms of gambling that people are talking about this afternoon. And especially this proposal before you would trap hundreds of thousands of Alaskans in the condition of being financially broke for a very long time. And so to kind of wrap up, when we talk about other states, it's amazing here, all the lottery directors talk about this. Commercialized gambling is America's biggest, most neglected problem. So just in 2018, the American people, and most Alaskans fortunately were spared from this number, but Americans lost $118 billion of their personal wealth to government-sanctioned gambling. Okay, over the next 8 years, the American people are on course to lose more than $1 dollars of their personal wealth to government-sanctioned gambling. Okay? So Alaska citizens have not suffered those kind of life-changing financial losses because you have not gone down this road. Okay? And so to summarize, and building assets, you know, this concept of creating wealth, it's the accumulation, it's in the investment of savings. Those are key for anyone who's looking to make a better life. Okay, a home, a college fund,
you had 2 minutes,
retirement accounts, a stock portfolio, and so on. These assets are the hallmarks of a middle and upper class America, and they are all the results of savings. So building assets is the direct opposite of commercialized gambling. So your committee, and I know your colleagues, you want to create financial peace for low to middle income citizens in Alaska, then the state needs to avoid the scheme before you today of turning hundreds of thousands of Alaskans who are small earners, who could be small savers, and don't turn them into habitual bettors. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Burnell. Appreciate your testimony. Next, we have Mac Mainers, is it, from Rippy World. Please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Mac Mainers. I've been in the charitable gaming business for over 20 years, and I've seen most everything. We operate Rippy World out of Anchorage, which is currently shuttered. So I'm kind of worried about the situation as it goes on farther. What I'd like to talk about today is gaming in general. When you look at lottos, you look at a lotto as they're ancient. They're a fun way to pay taxes. I can see a small way to do it, maybe scratch-offs. But in the same time, I do not want to see charitable gaming go away because I think I have 26 charities that I fund. And from my favorite, the Nick Swim Club, with their little goggles and their suits that send me a picture every year, brings a tear to my eye, and that's all I can ask for is a thank you. So I want you to think about how you go ahead with this because I know you need revenue, and this is a great tax scheme, and it really is, and I can see that as you continue to try to find ways to make revenue for the state, that this opens a lot of eyes. I've read all the testimonies and all the data on how gambling is bad and gambling is good. But I really, as a loss today, I'm not being able to be there in the room and really see the presentation that the state gave out. And I've listened to the other guys and the other thing, and the only way you can really start a game, I would start a game with the scratch-offs. I really wouldn't worry about the rest of it. Just start off slow, try to generate some revenue. But you need to cut the charities in somehow, some way. I'll just end at that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mainers. We appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else in the room who would like to testify? All right, seeing none, public testimony is now closed. Our next meeting will be held Thursday, March 19th at 3:30. Presently scheduled is SB 180, State Government Finances website, sponsored by Senator Wielichowski, the checkbook bill, as well as bills previously heard. This meeting is adjourned at 5:08 p.m.